Clap, go ahead, do it, Wayne. We're back. We're here with the generation that's considered the wussification of America. But go around your room, introduce yourself.
So I got the state record sucker.
No.
He goes straight to the clap. He goes straight to the clap.
Yeah.
Wayne Mershot.
That's my son. Go on, skip that guy. Okay.
I'm CJ Yoder, friend of Wade's.
I'm Colin Norton. I'm a new apprentice.
Fresh meat, go on.
My name is Aiden Curry.
Who's currently making his voice way deeper than what it actually is.
This isn't an online dating site. Go on.
Tinder.
Come on, Possum.
My name is Aiden Curry. I am a one-time state championship high school bass fisherman, two-time angler of the year, and I've been with you guys for how many years now?
Long time. Hanging out a bunch.
Yep.
His brother is Alex. Alex got it for us quite a bit. Everybody's heard Alex on the podcast, the previous ones.
All right, so how did you guys get into the outdoors?
All right, so probably my dad mostly, and then I had a lot of friends and stuff that did it a bunch too.
So your dad?
Mostly, yeah.
So tell us about your dad. I know your dad very well, but we'll let you tell.
He guided for quite a few years, and now he's doing commercial roofing and...
Lion hunting machine.
Lion hunting, yep.
Yep.
What age did you start fishing, hunting?
Pretty much ever since I can remember.
Since he could pack you in the woods?
Pretty much, yep.
I'm sure.
What about you, Wade?
I started doing that fresh out the womb, and...
Oh my god.
You started fishing and hunting right out of the womb.
Right out.
This is gonna be good.
Came out with a fishing pole and a gun.
You popped out with a fishing pole and a gun.
Correct.
All
you
right.
have 13 years experience now.
Just about.
Okay, good. Go, next.
My grandpa pulled me into it right away since I could ever really get out there fishing, hunting, everything. And I love it all.
Mine was probably my dad who got me into hunting, and my grandpa too. But for like bass fishing and stuff, it was probably my grandma's neighbor, Don Eckstead. He got me into the tournaments and taught me most everything I know about bass fishing.
Right on. So,
yeah. When did you start getting into tournaments?
I started tournament fishing when I was 8 years old.
And your neighbor got you into it?
Yeah, I fished with him and he got me into it.
Now you started getting Wade into it and took him up for the past couple years on your boat. You've competitively fished for way longer than these two. Where has it taken you?
I have gone to the high school national championship before, one time, qualified two times, but I only went once. And I've been to the national semifinal for the Northwest Division against Idaho. We fished against Idaho. I've done that 2 years now, qualified three, but fished in it twice. But yeah, it's taken me a few places, so.
Okay. And for kids that don't know how to start getting into fishing tournaments or anything like that, what would the advice you would give them?
First thing I would do is go and online and look up and see if your state offers a high school or a junior team. And that way you don't spend a whole bunch of money doing it, because a lot of it is sponsored and entry fees are a lot cheaper, and you're also fishing against people that are your age and have the same abilities, and not against 70-year-old dudes that have been doing it their whole life, and your chances of winning are probably not very high whenever you're 12 years old or something.
How about you guys tell the story of the first tournament this year that you won?
So our first tournament this year together, entered, got out on a little 12-foot aluminum boat.
Big engine on this boat?
Like a 25 horse motor.
25 horsepower.
What kind of looks were you guys getting?
I mean, they were expecting a small boat, but I don't think they were really expecting that small of a boat, because I'd told a couple people I was fishing, and I told them I had it's an okay boat. I mean, it's small, but...
Fredrick and bass tournaments, that's
yeah,
not.
Right.
And two punk kids.
What other kind of boats were in this competition with you?
Went up against a bunch of big old bass boats. Austin Johnson, you guys probably have heard of him. Mm-hmm. He's got a really nice, like a Triton.
Wicked
bass
nice bass boat.
Yeah, it's 250 nice horse.
And there
motor.
You guys are in a John boat. Didn't they give you a minute head start?
They let us go out for about 30 seconds. And there was one bass tracker that caught up to us. We got to the spot. We both went to the same spot. They got there about 30 seconds before us then. But they went up way up the bank, and we went down to the tree because we knew there was fish there. I mean, that tree is like one of those magic trees that holds a bunch of fish. I think, Wade, it was your first cast you hooked in, a nice one. And then after that, we kind of just fished that bank that that tree was on and just kept upgrading here and there. I think at the end of that day, we had like a 10-pound, 14-ounce bag with three fish.
Let's go over the first dilemma, the live well. These right. fish have to stay alive, right?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we had a tote from Walmart with a bilge pump inside, 10 feet of hose in circles on the inside as well, filled up with water. We had the hose zip tied to the side. That took about half the room up. The other half we were fishing on.
And you guys just went into this competition knowing you were going to win, right?
We didn't have no confidence, but I mean, we were definitely expecting not to do great. I mean, I knew we weren't going to get last, but I figured we'd do okay at least.
So Wade, why don't you tell us how you ended up?
We ended up pretty good, like first place.
Oh yeah, and then you and me both tied for big fish too with 3-8.
So you guys got first place and big fish?
Yep.
Yeah, so we caught same pound fish. We caught two different fish that weighed 3.8 pounds.
So you guys are obsessed with fishing, and no one understands the pain of driving these two knuckleheads fishing all the time. Colin this year, they suckered him right in, right off the bat. Anybody with wheels.
You just a ride.
How annoying is it? Just explain how.
It's annoying when you think you know how to fish, and Wade just steps in and does the same thing you do when you can catch fish, but I can't.
I got you 5 PBs, your personal best fish.
So it sounds like you're catching some fish.
Yeah.
A little bit here. CJ had to help me catch a fish the other day. I couldn't catch one and save my life.
They're letting you reel them in every once in a while then.
Tell them about your PBs, your personal best.
Caught a smallmouth bass with Wade, and he told me I was up there towards one of the bigger ones he's ever caught. I caught my first walleye the same night. Another day, I was with CJ and Wade, hooked into a big pike. Well, it was big to me. To them, they told me it was average, and kind of hurt my feelings a little bit, but I was so excited.
Now, it was an honor for you to be able to go along with them on their survival trip.
So our survival trips, we do it every year around my friend CJ's birthday, around 4th of July. We just go out, take his boat, and go try to find an island or something to camp on. We'll just try to catch fish for food and just hope that we don't die mauled by a grizzly bear or something.
They're feral.
Explain what you pack for these survival trips.
We pack lighters if it's not regulation stage 2, fire hazards or whatever, and bring a couple knives, flay knives, some salt, pepper, Old Bay, some maybe some lemons and butter if we're feeling pretty good.
Do you bring food?
We usually try to stay fairly close to a gas station.
Yes.
That way we can access the gas station with the boat. That way when we don't catch fish, we can still have food.
But that's not a problem because we always catch fish.
So you literally just go in there with a plan to catch fish for survival?
No, our plans never work out. We never come in or out with a plan, so we just kind of go in there. We kind of make up a plan to convince them that we have a good plan so that we can go that day. Sometimes we'll say that morning or a couple minutes before we do it, we're going to have a survival challenge. We're just going to go out maybe for a couple days. Yeah, Colin was lucky enough to come with us this year and get his little tiny pike, what's now his PB. How did you feel about our camping adventure?
It was one of a kind.
One of a kind.
It's definitely different.
Where'd you guys sleep?
On the boat.
Sometimes we sleep on the boat. Sometimes we just sleep along a cliff. There was one problem about camping right next to a beaver hut. Beavers tend to come out during the night and just slap their tail against the water, what wakes us up.
Aiden, do you remember when you were there when you were 14 and yeah. you were over here? And remember how I said, you're going to look at me one day and be like, how didn't you wring my neck?
Does it sound familiar, these two?
Oh, yes. Yes,
and now we pawn them off on you as instant
it's
karma.
It's my payback, yeah.
Now all Aiden does is just talk about his fake fairy tale girlfriends. Now he doesn't really have time to go fishing with us, so.
All right, we could talk about fishing forever. Think you're as good at hunting as you are fishing?
No, not even close.
Probably not. I mean, I can squirrel hunt fairly, fairly well. And grouse. Small game.
Praying on the small game.
Big game. I'm going to call in My dad's big bull. Probably might be like a 200-incher, maybe
one. Big one.
Big one.
Big one.
Big one.
Maybe a spike. He might be legal. He could have 4-inch brow tines. About 4-inch brow tines, you shoot, Dad.
You guys like to go hunting with your parents, like family members, or would you rather go hunt with your buddies
Buddies. I'd way rather go hunt with my buddies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the freedom. You guys are just cut loose. No one's just standing over your shoulder saying not to do that.
If you go with your dad, it's like they're so controlling, like, you can't shoot it that way.
That's probably a good thing.
That's a very good thing, but like,
so how much of that
do you really want to shoot that far?
My father is probably my favorite person to hunt with, just because every time I go with him, I learn way more than what I did whenever we parked the truck.
I want you to tell your brother's hunt.
So me and my brother, we've hunted tons and tons together. But especially this last year, he drew a special bull elk tag in eastern Montana in a very big bull elk unit. And it was opening week. We had headed over. First day, he went out scouting with my father. They didn't find much. It's a tough unit because there's not a lot of public land. It's a lot of private and landlocked public, so you can't access it. Later in that evening, my dad and Alex located a spot. It was a piece of state ground that was leased out by a farmer. So the next morning, we made a game plan. Me and Alex would be dropped off and work our way into the timber and wait until it got daylight from a good vantage point where we could see most of the area. And it gets light, and legal shooting light, I believe, was about 7:13. You could see at about 7 o'clock. So we snuck up over the hill, got on top of this knob, and we're looking down into this field, and there's two bull elk standing there that are for definite shooters. Both bulls were standing there, and we got a range on it, and I believe it was something like 385, 400 maybe, something on the range. Alex got on the gun, and I was on the spotter watching him, and I was watching the time, waiting until it got legal light, and it was 7. We saw him at about 7:03, and Alex was like, what time is it? And I'm like, oh, it's only 7:05, got a couple more minutes. And it just felt like forever.
Dragon.
It felt like it was forever. At about like 7:08, this bull, it's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. The sun just breaks over top of the trees, and that both those bull elk picked up that little bit of light, and they were dead calm feeding. They got that light hit them, and they picked up their head, and they just started walking, and they did not stop. We watched them walk into the timber. I mean, they weren't spooked or nothing. They've been hunted. They're smart. Yeah. They're not stupid.
They're getting out of the opening.
They're getting out of the opening. They ain't going to hang out there. They're going to find somewhere to bed down and hang out until dark. So they started walking, and they walked into the timber. And once they got out of sight, me and Alex, my brother, we picked up our gear and made it our way down and across the field. And we snuck up over top of a little knob in the timber. And there was a little opening, and both bulls were standing there. And he took the one on the left, which was the bigger bull, shot it and killed it. The bull ended up scoring, yeah, I believe it was 355. It was a big bull, but
it's a stud.
It's a stud. It's giant.
Big typical 6-point.
Yep, real symmetrical, real nice looking bull.
Did you cry?
I didn't, no.
Did your brother?
I believe so a little bit.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Him and dad both.
That's awesome.
Man. Yeah, yeah.
You guys have been hunting together for your whole lives. So it makes it nice when you have a hunting partner like that, where you almost don't even have to like talk or fight or anything. You just know.
Oh, they're still fighting. Oh yeah. He's always trying to act like he knows better, but he might a little bit. He probably does. He probably knows a little bit more than I do.
These two have already had a couple crazy stories.
Everybody likes to hear the packing out stories. They like always that. I was with Aiden on his first pack out. He about died off.
That was the closest I've been to death.
I pull Aiden back while we're going to the kill, and I was like, Aiden, when we get in here, the other guides are going to try to get you to take a whole bunch of weight. Just refuse. What do we do? Go on, Aiden.
We loaded that sucker down. Yeah. Tanner and Alex, they're both like, oh, you got it. You got it. Here you go, bud. Here's a hind quarter for you. I'm like, how old was I? Like
14?
I was like 14, yeah.
Yeah, I'll never forget how red your cheeks were.
Fat little chubby kid, yeah.
First 100 yards, you were good, huh?
Yo, first 100 yards, I was moving right along, and then after that, I went downhill. I did good until we hit the first rock slide, and then I looked down, and I'm like, this is a lot more weight than what I'm used to, and if I go, I don't think I'm stopping.
You didn't give up, though.
Oh, nope. Nope, you weren't cutting that thing off me.
Why don't you tell about your first pack out?
We went back to a spot, and my dad's good call. Client killed a bull back there. I was about 7 or 8 years old, and we just kind of started hiking, and I'm like, wow, this is getting tough. I didn't want to say anything, just wanted to act like I was tough, but...
This is in the pouring down rain. Yeah. It's like 30 degrees, 32, like mist and snowy rain, miserable. Well, there was a bear on the carcass.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't get into the meat, but it was on the carcass. Tell what you remember of it.
I do remember they're like, my dad's like, protect this kid with your whole life. My dad told me stand right by the tree.
I made you put your hands against the tree.
Yeah. And
I told him there was a better chance that he would get shot if a bear got to running around in there than him probably getting mauled up. And it was just better if he stayed in one position behind everybody so they knew where he was at and you didn't have a kid running around.
Grizzly bear.
Yeah.
So that was your first pack out? And your first kind of like predator scare. And since then, I have had
two encounters with mountain lions and one with a bear, I say. And then we jumped up a grizzly bear in another spot, but nothing really happened while I was fly fishing up a little mountain stream. Every single incident with a predator I had was around fishing or hiking or whatnot. The first incident I had with a mountain lion was I was fly fishing up a spot. Secret spot, and we were heading back from the spot, caught like 100 some fish that day, and we're just coming back down the trail. We had, I think, one hound.
We had one hound that still had stitches in her because she's old, she had cancer, and we had a little tiny puppy.
Yeah, so we thought it was a little white-tailed deer, but then it just started coming up the trailhead and...
Coming for you.
Just... coming to eat me or whatnot. So
teeth showing
and everything started growling or whatnot, and
he's actually not lying. It was bounding up the trail, like coming at us full charge. It was pretty wild. Yeah.
Everybody else grabbed their handgun and I grabbed a big club, held it in my hand. I was gonna beat it to death with a stick.
If it would have kept coming, we probably would have shot it, but my hound come up behind us and like met it on the trail and it turned and run 150 yards across the river and treed over there. So we throwed our fishing poles down and went to like retrieve the dog and the puppy that went with them over there. We come back across the river to get our fishing poles and stuff, and we continue down the trail, and the daggum mountain lion comes back on the trail, walks down the trail in front of us like nonchalantly, like just casually. So we had to put the dogs on a lead strap and went almost to where we had parked the truck, within like 300 yards where we parked the truck. And she cut left and just paralleled the gravel road. Wow. It was an interesting event. Were you scared?
No,
not at all. You liar.
Yeah, I was kidding. I was kind of scared when it kind of got back up on the trail. But other than that.
Yeah, you didn't think you'd see it anymore after the dogs chased it off. If we wouldn't have had the dogs with us, we would have had to dispatch that mountain lion for 100%.
All right, now let's get to the good mountain lion charging.
All right, the other mountain lion charging. How weird is it that you guys are, 13 years old and you've had two mountain lion encounters? Serious ones? Close ones?
Like, yeah, very close.
CJ, tell the story about you and Wade getting
into the lion. So we went up Secret Creek that has a bunch of fish. We were fishing, catching bunches of fish, having fun. Josh, you were probably, 70, 80 yards back behind us?
Yeah. Just
fishing all the holes that we already walked through. So I had just caught like a 10-inch brown trout. I was taking pictures of it. And all of a sudden we hear this real deep, low growl.
Can you imitate that? Come on.
And then it kind of paused like a voice crack or whatever. And then it did it again.
I hear that and I'm like, what was that? He looks at me. His eyes are massive. He's like, we gotta go. And so he grabbed a rock, threw it in there. I grabbed a rock, threw it in there.
The weeds started moving, and then we kind of grabbed sticks and rushed it.
Just took off down the creek.
Wide open down the creek.
Josh probably had no idea what was going on at that point.
They probably thought we just caught a big fish. I think that's what you guys are. You're like, you guys catch a big fish?
How about you, Aiden? Have you ever been charged by an animal?
I've been charged by a black bear before.
Tell us about that, because I remember we were part of this.
I don't camp.
So we went into a spot that we were going to camp for the weekend, a top secret location.
All locations are top secret.
It was for the outfit. We were back in there working at the camp and doing some stuff.
So they went into camp earlier. I had to work that day. So I headed in right after I got off work at about 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. I get to the last little part of the creek and I'm like, I'll just wade across. I got extra socks. My boots will dry overnight. It'll be fine. You know, I can spare get my feet wet this time. I get over there and then I was like, okay, now it's time to change my socks and put on my camp shoes. And I forgot to pack socks.
So you were cranking coming in there because the sun was setting there too. It was a little spooky down in there.
You burned your socks.
I'm getting there.
We're getting to that point.
I'm like, oh, it's all right. I'll just dry my socks out over the fire. They ended up falling in the fire and burning. So I had zero socks. Instead of wet socks, I had zero. Because he told me, he's like, I ain't giving you no socks. You screwed up. You're out. You're SOL. You got to figure this one out. So I hear Josh complaining that he's chafing. And I'm like, well, do I have a deal for you?
Opportunist Aiden is.
I was like, this is a business deal. I traded underwear for socks. So I start heading out. I'm wandering out of there. And you come down to where you cross a creek. And you kind of come off this ridge a little bit. And you drop down into a creek bottom. And then there's another creek crossing. Well, I get down and I cross, drop off kind
of this. Kept the boots dry this time.
Yeah, I kept the boots dry this time. And I look up and there's a bear sitting on a log, a little black bear. It's sitting there and it takes off towards the creek. And I didn't think nothing about it. You know, spooked it. It's gone. No worries. And I keep on down the trail. And it, when it took off, it headed down towards the creek, and I figured it'd just cross the creek and never see it again. Well, I am getting pretty close to the creek, just about ready to cross it, and it's loud. You can't hear much, but I hear a branch break. And I turn around and look behind me, and there's a bear full charge. So I yelled at it and hollered at it, and it got pretty close. It got probably within 20 yards, and it went back up, and after that, I
had your head on a swivel.
Had my head on a swivel.
And you wish you didn't trade him your extra pair of underwear.
Yeah, I could use those underwear.
So what even like brought this like full circle is the bear had an ear tag.
Yep, it had an ear tag.
And just that previous archery season, I had an encounter with that same bear, and it come right in on us and two clients. Really wouldn't leave us, and I actually shot and blowed bark off of a tree and shot in front of it and threw rocks and stuff at it to get it to run off. It was a goofy bear. I'd say it'd been caught by the game commission.
Yeah, it definitely had zero concern about humans. It was not worried about him at all. Other than that, I haven't been charged by anything. I've been close to stuff, but I've never had anything full on charge before.
So since you guys do this at such a young age, you all get taught by like the School of Hard Knocks on what to do and what to do. Oh, yeah. So by the older
guys.
I mean, it's hilarious for us to sit back and say like, don't do that. And then we're like, never mind, just learn for yourself.
So bullying works.
We've been trying it with Wade and CJ on the perfect pack out shoes, and it hasn't seemed to work yet because
clients coming out here to hunt, what's the best footwear?
So probably the best footwear to wear at any age, you can be from 100 years old to like my age. I'd probably recommend a pair of Crocs.
What color?
Probably white. That's white Crocs, that's the color I rock. But CJ, what's yours?
Obviously your size, hey dudes, if they're not your size, they're probably gonna either blow out or you're gonna have sore feet. But if you have the right size, hey dudes, you'll be
hey dudes and Crocs,
you'll be in good condition. But the thing is, they dry out quick. Like, you can cross any creek and within 10 minutes you'll be completely dry again.
And the best thing is, if you're in the winter or you just had an ice storm, you can slide really, really well down like a hill or something.
Yeah.
How do you know this?
Well, how long ago was it? Like less than a month ago, we went and hiked, 10 miles in those in one day, packed out a mountain lion, 2 miles?
Yeah.
Packed out a mountain
with
lion.
With 8 inches of snow?
Yep.
130-pound
lion.
We felt bigger than that.
We run this big male lion, and the dogs run him quite a few hours. Finally, they tree, and your aunt kills the lion. we let the lion on the logging road, and we figured we'd go back up and get it, and I'd just take the boys, but we would go get dry clothes. So I never look at you guys' shoes. I figure you knuckleheads put your boots back on. We drive clear back up onto the mountain to the logging road, and these two jump out in 8 inches of snow with Hey Dudes and Crocs. We took a little ice fishing sled up there with us and made them pull the mountain lion down the hill with the ice fishing sled.
Then me and CJ had a little fun with it, and we hopped on the sled and slid down the mountain.
And the only thing that stopped them from riding the mountain lion more down over the hill was we told them they were going to have to drag it back up to the road if it went down over there.
So the school hard knocks has not set in for you guys yet. We haven't given you a challenge that your Hey Dudes and your Crocs haven't been able to
bring them on.
We're ready.
That's about my go-to shoe wear is the Crocs.
Why don't you tell everybody what else you did in your Crocs this summer?
Your claim to fame.
Oh, yeah. As some of you know, I caught state record suckerfish.
Tell this story.
Well, anyway, I was wearing my proper foot cover that I recommend for any age. I was targeting a large-scale suckerfish.
You went back there to catch a large-scale sucker.
Oh, no.
You were trout fishing.
I was trout fishing, just fly
fishing. Just you.
No, me and my dad's apprentice, Colin, for some reason brought a sturgeon rod about 9 or 10 foot.
8 foot regular pole.
No, absolutely not. I noticed that there were some big, big fish in there, and there were suckerfish doing all these cool magic tricks with their girlfriend, and I saw them. I cast my night crawler in front of them. Caught like 3, maybe 4 pounders, and then I saw this giant suckerfish. Colin started casting at it, and then I recognized, and I'm like, oh, buddy, watch out. Like, took me 9 or 10 casts, and then I finally got the perfect drift. And then I caught it, and I was very, very scared. I was about had to wrestle that thing in the water to get up on the bank, because it almost got tangled into a falling down limb or tree or something.
Crocs are waterproof.
Crocs are waterproof again. Water can get into them, but, like, they're rubber, so, like, they're waterproof.
You were, like, just masseying the tip of this rod. Just working this fish.
Doing the magic. Yeah. And then we got this thing in, and I was gonna do whatever, and I'm like, oh, this is state record. I repeated state record about 3 times. And
now, how the heck did you two knuckleheads know it was a state record?
So when I'm not fishing or after I'm done fishing, I like to study my state records, because I got many, many more state records to come, so I like to know before I put back a big fish that it's not state record.
What are you going for next?
Short nose sucker, which is in the family of a large scale sucker, and then after that, I'll go through the whitefish family.
What's the world record largemouth bass?
I'm pretty the like weight, mm-hmm. 22 pounds and 4 ounces.
He's actually correct on that.
No way.
He's dead on.
Fish. This podcast is now turned into trivia.
We should do the trivia podcast before, like Steve Renella.
So the sucker fish is landed. Now you two knuckleheads, here you come.
Here they come up the driveway. Wade is hanging out of the window screaming that he caught a state record. I've heard this at least 100 times from him before, so I just assume that he's lying.
So here we are with this large scale sucker in a cooler down at the local
grocery store.
Yeah. We're down at Harvest Foods, and the guy is super excited. The biologist, he's never checked in a state record. He's all pumped up. They go back in there. A crowd develops for this high performance carp.
Yeah, there's customers all around the meat shop. There started to be a crowd started where customers were not allowed to be in where they processed the meat, and the butchers or whatever had a certified scale ready for me, and the biologists were sitting there with clipboards videoing, and everybody was just hyped up, and then he announced the weight,
and like people were going wild, air horns for this large scale sucker. When you come out, that was like they lifted you over their shoulders and
I walked out of there, everybody is staring at me, clapping. Oh, congratulations on your state record. And I got a lot of weird looks when we first pulled up and I was holding a ugly old carp that looked like the frozen.
It's so beautiful. About that picture.
In Harvest Foods.
It has literally been around the country now.
You got grilled, my guy. You got grilled. Oh my gosh, Facebook.
The comments were brutal. Someone literally said that your parents should be ashamed for making someone so ugly.
Yeah, and I take full offense to that because I'm the most handsomest child in the world. I mean, everybody's like, ooh, is that the...
Is that the sucker king?
Is that the sucker king?
Is that the carp king over there?
Oh my goodness.
Everybody's Jerky like, chew. That kid is so cool. He has a Zen in his pocket.
What did you have in your pocket in that video that circulated?
I had a can of original Jack Daniel's beef jerky.
Jack Daniel's beef jerky.
I think no, you can't say that.
What?
It's not Jack Daniel's. It's probably Jack Lynx.
Oh yeah, Jack Lynx.
It was just innocent beef jerky.
Yeah.
So that's how messed up social media is. They saw a can in the kid's pocket, not thinking it could have been worms or anything like that. It's Zins. My age group looking at social media, it's the devil. And you guys like it. You're trying to all be famous TikTokers. Fishermen on YouTubers.
Instagrammer.
Famous Instagrammer in the outdoors. So what's the pros of social media?
Social media could be used because it's showing people things that they can do. If you become good at something like and make videos about it, you could become famous and stuff like that. And I think that's like a lot. Everybody's dream when they're a little kid is to become famous.
And also it brings hunting and fishing from all around the world right to your phone, and kids now can see like what kind of fishing it's offered in the south or in the west in a different country, so it might be their goal to go there and explore.
I think social media will be a boost in people's confidence and maybe want encourage them to get out into the wild and just nature and just
so what are you guys' futures? What do you want to do in the outdoors? Are you gonna like keep living in the outdoors like you are right now, trying to live a life close to nature?
So I am going to take care of this outfit, and then when I'm at like their age, I'm gonna racking all these bills in, and then I'm gonna go get me a live in the off-grid Alaskan wilderness, catching king salmon, sockeye, whatnot, just living off the grid.
So you think we're just gonna hand you this business?
Correct.
You're gonna collect a bunch of money from it,
but I will have to pay you guys.
And then you're gonna disappear.
Correct. I'm gonna take people fishing. I can hire me some, like CJ. You can be the head hunting guide or whatever you want. I'll be the fishing guide.
But the future of our business is looking good. CJ, you can do whatever you want. Wade, he's gonna do whatever he wants, and you two will just be fishing and hunting together.
Correct. I have something to add to that. If my business or whatever crashes, I'm going to be a pro motocross racer. I'm on my way to be a pro motocross racer, so.
He's on his way.
You're just manifesting all those dreams. But inevitably, you will have a career in the outdoors.
In the outdoors, I will not be a gamer kid anymore.
All right, CJ, what do you think?
Yep.
What's your ambitions?
I'm going to guide at least for a little while. Maybe try to make it in the professional bass fishing world. If that doesn't work out, I'll probably just go back to guiding, hunting, fishing.
That's good. I like it. No construction, steering clear of that.
That stuff hurts.
It's always good to have it in your tool bag,
smashes
though.
Your fingers. I'll figure out if need be, I'll start doing that for a little bit at least. Get a chunk of money to go here and go there, but I'll try to keep that at a minimal.
The more things you know how to do, the better it is. You always have work then.
Aiden, what are you going to do when you grow up?
Well, I'll probably be, hunting guide and welder.
So you've been welding a long time. Yeah. We have little trinkets and things that you've been making since you've been a little kid in shop class. That's your passion. That's what you want to do.
Yeah.
You've been slowly setting your truck up for the last couple of years so that you can travel weld, kind of.
Yep. In the wintertime, hunting season stuff, probably guide and stuff. And
can we ask you about college? Well, you can just answer.
I'll talk about it.
Yeah. So you've grown up like in a very cool place, like out here. You get to experience the outdoors like part of your way of life. So Aiden went to the big city to go to college.
Yeah.
How'd you fit in with them fellas?
Not very good, no.
Not very good.
Not at all.
No.
I went to college for a little bit. It was a welding school. Yeah, it wasn't for me. I went for a little bit and decided that I am more of a on-hands learner and prefer to learn from older people that have been doing it forever. And I want to be able to learn, but I also want to be able to make money at the same time.
Yeah, make your own schedule. Yep. Entrepreneur, which we need more of them. Good words, Aiden. That's smart.
Yep.
I hope you get very, very far in life.
All right, we wrapping up. You guys got any final thoughts?
I encourage people to get out into the wild and just go to your local park and just shoot a couple birds or whatnot. Toodles.
all the good-looking ladies that are listening to this right now, you can follow me on my Instagram, AidenCurry74, or you can add me on Snap, acurry132. I'm also on Tinder. Yeah.
These boys' dreams is to meet a girl at a boat ramp. Yes. Or a clear cut.
Or at the top of a mountain.
All right, we're done.